Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi friends, it's Bridie and Jeremy back again another week with this week's guest Kay from Out West. This is such a fun episode. It's kind of a return to old school Termion vibes. We talked to Kay about her relationship with her dad growing up in a small town with one or two things going on in his life and family life that you're going to find out real soon. Get ready for some gentle twists and turns, and we'll see you on the other side.
Well, this is going to be really fun because I feel like it's been, I don't know. Time has been so fucky since COVID started. It's hard for me to track like what is going on in a period of time. You know, I went to a bar with two friends last night and then I saw my friend that I was at the bar with just a moment ago and thought, were we at the bar together last night or was that like a week ago? Mm-hmm. Time is a fucking weird, fickle thing right now. But I feel legit, I feel like I might be nailing this. It's probably been like maybe 2 years since we've just had an OG Termion episode where we're just like, yo, let's talk to someone who is not a fucking therapist, who's not a sexual researcher, who's not an OnlyFans model. Let's just talk to a regular muggle about their sex life and about their upbringing and about their sexual debut. Like, it's been a while since we've had like one of those OG Termion episodes.
Yeah, and it's not because we don't want to do those episodes anymore.
No.
Absolutely not. Just kind of what comes across the table. So if you hear that and you're one of these people with a story, definitely reach out because I'm just really relieved to sit down and have this conversation today, actually. It just feels... Yeah, it feels like old hat.
Feels like just hanging
like
out.
Comfortable
just
hat.
Hanging out. We're hanging out today with our friend Kay from the opposite side of the country. And Kay, I'm very excited to talk to you for a plethora of different reasons that we don't even need to get into, but I'm excited to talk to you about you've got a really interesting story and a really interesting upbringing. And yep. And I know that it has a lot to do with there's going to be dads are going to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us have.
I've been thinking a lot about my dad lately, so
I think we all have some stuff with our dads.
Yeah, when I read your email, I was like, I bet my dad also would have benefited from the language of polyamory. My dad was not a serial monogamist, but you indicated that your dad was. So
yeah,
maybe we should jump into some dad talk.
Sure. All right. Okay. I guess I'll just start with like the thing that is always the interesting part of my story, which is that I grew up with a dad who owned a porn store. And I feel like that's not a very common thing.
It's not. And no. I laugh at that because I used to work at a porn store and I wish I got the chance to meet whoever owned it. I don't think I ever knew the person who owned it. I knew the person that managed it and they were a character. But owning a porn store, like that is, I mean.
Were you born into a porn store family?
Were you born in the porn shop?
Born into the porn store family. I mean, close, but okay. No. So I think what's unique about this too, is it like, it's not like my dad bought a franchise. Like he started his own independent porn store in a small conservative town.
Wow.
So in 1994, I was 4 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is when the porn store opened.
Correct.
In a small town.
Correct.
A small conservative town.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was it the only porn store in town?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep. For sure. Yeah. What, can I ask like what your old man was up to before he decided to open up the only porn store in the small town?
He ran and owned a lounge attached to his parents' bowling alley that they owned.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Right. And before that, he worked in radio.
Okay. Wow.
A personality.
At least now I know if this fails that I can go in and open up a lounge attached to a bowling alley.
I would love that.
Open a porn store.
I would love that. Yeah.
So like the porn store thing, one of the things that I'm curious about is like you were saying it was 1994. You were four years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a... Like when I think about when I was four and think about growing up to my like adult years, my dad pretty much had the same job the entire time. And you know, he would different companies, but same work, same shit, just like selling automotive parts. Like that was his vibe. And it evolved here and there, but like it was just through like shifting companies. So I know my dad is auto parts guy. You know, if like my fucking car breaks down the highway, I call my dad and I go, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Is
valuable.
Was the sex shop did that last for a while? Like, was your dad, is your dad in your mind? Like, my dad's the porn guy.
Correct. Yeah. So he opened it in 1994 and it ran until I want to say 2008 or 2009. So when I was just graduated from high school.
Wow.
But it wasn't really a porn store. It was a front for him selling weed.
Oh.
Yeah.
The truth comes out.
Mm-hmm. I think it started as a porn store and then the internet got in the way.
Uh-huh.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Pornhub hits and it's like, well, what the fuck do we do now?
Yeah.
So when did you become aware of the porn store?
So that's an interesting part of it is I feel like just sitting and thinking about what I was going to talk about. I'm like, there was a period of my life where it was just my life. Like, I just didn't think about it. Like, I hung out in the back room at the porn store. Like, that's where I grew up.
Right.
I don't know.
Behind I guess there are no beaded curtains because the whole thing is a beaded curtain. Like, the beaded curtains was for people who don't, for the younger listeners, there was a time where you would go to like Jason's Video and it was like the local like video rental shop, like
that's
Blockbuster.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in Jason's Video, it's like, oh, you've got the Disney section over here. And over here, you've got like the, you know, like Face Off and the R-rated like adult movies. And, but then there was the beaded curtain. And behind the beaded curtain was like, and here's where you're going to see a bunch of pussy and buttholes.
Yeah.
Like this is the, you can't go back here if you're a kid. But there was no beaded curtain.
No.
You were just, the whole thing was a beaded curtain. You were just hanging out back there.
Yeah, I mean, he had a back room that had a door to it and that like he kept mostly cover free, I will say. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tapes with no jackets on them in the back room. And I remember like we'd always go through the front and he'd be like, close your eyes. I mean,
whoa.
I didn't.
Yeah, right.
You'd peek, you know. Yeah. So like for most of my younger years, that I didn't really think about it. Mm. And I actually had this like intense defense of him. Like I have a memory of being in grade four and this kid pushing me off the swings and being like, your dad's a pervert. And I was like, well, how do you know? And she was like, well, my parents told me. And I was like, well, how do your parents know? They rent videos from him. Like that's,
yeah, right.
That was my attitude for a long time where I was just like, well, fuck everybody else. Like,
did that,
he's a cool guy.
But even before that though, like, can you, cause this is actually really, this is a really wild thing to think about. You know, in terms of like, if I was in grade four and someone was like, your dad's a pervert, I think I'd be like, what's a pervert? Like, what does that even fucking mean? So like at what point do you think, even though you said you didn't really think about it, like mm-hmm. at what point in your life do you think that you at least had some sort of like grasp or comprehension of the fact that your dad worked at a place that had to do with like the, you know, the thing that adults do?
Like, I don't even have a sense of that. Like it was this weird thing because this is what my dad did. I spent a lot of time there, but we didn't talk about it. Like we just, as a family, we didn't talk about it. My mom and dad could not have been more opposite. It was just kind of this like, don't ask, don't tell. Mm-hmm. But yet it's like, we all know because we're hanging out there and like, you know, there's kids who aren't allowed to hang out with me because of what my dad does. And I mean, it's a small town. Everyone knows, you hear my last name and you know who my dad is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I do have a distinct memory of is as I was kind of becoming a sexual person, like, you know, late elementary, beginning junior high, starting to feel weird about it, starting to feel embarrassed about it, starting to feel worried about other people's perceptions of me in a way that I wasn't before.
And like, what were you worried those perceptions were going to be? Like you were a slut kind of
yeah.
thing? Or?
Yeah, I was like terrified that people would only want to date me because they thought that I'd be easy. Mm-hmm. Or that if I like acted on the desires I had, that I would be perceived in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you, I had a question that was haunting me there for a minute. And
I felt like you haunting. Were literally, I felt like you almost said, I had a great question. I had a great question
and
wow,
it's just
that's
gone.
A flex. What a flex. You knew it was fucking good and you don't even remember it.
Well, did it impact your relationship with your dad then during your early teens and stuff?
So there's another part to this story. Okay. And that's when I was 12 years old, we found out that my dad had been having an affair for 8 years. Ooh. And had two, not biological children, but two kids he'd been parenting that whole time who were my age and my brother's age.
Wow. 8 years is a very long yeah. time to keep.
So
a
from the time
like
the store opened, it was that whole, right. And the woman like worked with him at the store.
Of course.
And so now all of a sudden I have this stepsister who lives in the same town as me. It's the same age as me. And my dad's been her stepdad for 8 years and I didn't know she existed. You know, and
were you guys going to the same school?
So, you know, I was thinking about this in maybe a way I hadn't thought of. I know at the time I internally blamed myself for my parents splitting up because I think they had an agreement that they were just going to stay together. Like my mom knew he had this other relationship.
Oh, okay.
This is what I've deduced, but they were going to stay together until my brother turned 18. But right. then my stepsister, or who's now my stepsister, befriended me when we went to the same junior high. We didn't go to the same school before that. And I think they realized that the secret couldn't be kept up, that it would come out.
Sorry about that. That's crazy.
So
your
sorry,
mom
so
knew.
She knew?
Yeah.
She befriended me.
The daughter knew. Wow.
Yeah.
So she must have been having conversations with her mom
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I mean, this is blowing my mind. I mean,
right.
Especially because my mom and dad just split up. And so like, I'm still fresh in that kind of vibe, that feeling of like, what the fuck? But coming back to the point that your stepsister knew, befriended you, have you thought much about that? Like, do you think that she did that with like a, because she didn't tell you, right? So like,
no, she did not.
Did she do that? Do you think that she did that out of like with malicious intent, or do you think it was like kind of a way to cope with the fact that she knows this fucked up thing and is like almost there to try to like offer this secret support.
Yeah, I don't blame her at all. It was really fucking hard at the time. And the week before our parents told us that we were, I have three siblings. The week before they told us all that they were splitting up, my dad told me, I have really exciting news for you in a week and you're going to be able to see that friend more often. So, and I didn't want to be friends with her anymore after that.
Of course.
At the time I was devastated. In retrospect, I don't blame her at all. I don't know the whole story if like she was encouraged to befriend me, or if she just wanted to, because she knew that I was eventually going to be her stepsister or that we like shared this father.
Right.
But that was this distinct time in my life where all of a sudden I was so angry at my dad. And I was really close with him. Like we were really, really, really close. That everything that I had previously defended him for became bad in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like so all he's of a sudden, bad. Porn's you are bad. The fucking pervert. Yeah. 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 Right. Oh, fuck.
It was
man.
Like this before and after. And that I think fucked me up more than anything, where I was just like, now everything associated with him is bad. And I don't want to be known for this.
Mm-hmm. What was your relationship like with your mom, like before and after this all came out? Because you were saying that she knew and like there was an agreement between your parents. So like, did that affect the way that you saw like the light that you saw your mom in?
Yeah, I would say so. Like I was always more naturally connected with my dad, just as people. He had like a warmth to him that they were very opposite, the two of them. I think that I, at the time, was just angry at everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I felt lied to by her as well, right? Sure, that they had kept the secret from all of us. And I just became an angry kid.
Mm. 12 is an interesting age to learn a big secret that your family has been keeping. I had a similar experience. And I've often thought back, like, you know, just be that time you're changing so much. Your whole world is changing as you know it because of hormones and whatnot. And you're going off to new school and new levels of independence and stuff like that. And now all of a sudden you're handed this like adult piece of information that, you know, I don't know about you, but a disappointment in the adults that I had looked up to my whole life.
I agree. I think disappointment's a great word. Like it became, what can I trust? And who are these people? Do I know them? If I thought I did.
What can I trust is that resonates huge for me too. So what's happening? Is your dad still with that person?
So my dad actually passed away 10 years ago. About 10 years ago when I was 21, really unexpectedly. And there was kind of a like general rough relationship with me and all my siblings with him because he had gotten arrested for the third time. That's why the store ended, because they repossessed it. the last time he was arrested, he was in remand for a year.
Okay.
And there was kind of a general slow gaining back of a relationship with him. Like I didn't speak with him for a number of years and we were starting to rebuild a relationship and then he passed away, unfortunately.
Sorry to hear that.
But he was with her when he passed away. Yeah.
And so are you close still with your step siblings? No.
I haven't seen my stepmom since the funeral, which was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And my stepsister and I occasionally will like connect through social media. And then, you know, pre-COVID we met up once for dinner and it was really nice because she has memories of my dad I don't have. And I'm now seeking them, right? I want them now. And we have some shared memories, but our lives went in really different directions. And I recognize that, like, interestingly enough, she was parented by my dad from the age of 12 on. And I really wasn't. I had more of a friendship with him or a distance. It was one or the other. And I see how her life was impacted by being raised by the person who was going to jail and, running the porn store still.
The jails came with the weed stuff?
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah. So that came, like after that 12 mark. That's really interesting.
Yeah, he was arrested when I was 14, 17, and 18. Okay. The three times,
Ugh.
Three times. So he was arrested like again and again and again. He just kept he just kept dealing.
Yeah.
Wow. And what was the max sentence that he ended up with?
So it was he was in year remand for a year, and then I think he got time served, is my understanding. First two times were just house arrest.
Sure, sure.
Which I don't think he necessarily followed. But.
So, I all of this is, you know, I think that for some people, like maybe like myself, up to a certain point in my life, not right now, but like, let's say maybe 6 years ago, if someone had said to me, like, how do you think your relationship with your mom and dad has like affected your relationships or like your intimacy or your sex life, I'd probably be like, none at all. I'm like, I don't fucking know. That has nothing to do with my life, and that's their life and fucking whatever. But now as I like, especially in doing this podcast and even doing Sick Boy, and like looking at my past and looking at past experiences and looking at my relationship with my mother and my father, very much so, they're like, they do play a very specific, they play a deep role in how I go about expressing love and receiving love and giving love, and you know, that probably plays out in my sex life in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, Bridie, you probably would agree to say that you also have a similar experience, and like in agreeing that's probably, you know, if you do some digging and think about it, that the relationship you've had with your mom and dad has played a role in who you are
and
as a lover.
The relationship that they've had with each other.
Yes,
and
all the
relationships. All the
other relationships that they've had with everybody else. So I'm curious to know, like, this is such a, Kay, you have such a unique childhood and a very sort of special story here. How do you think this has had an effect on the way that you
relate?
Seek love and the way that you relate to like an intimate partner, and the way that you view the idea of sex and sexuality, and especially with all the porn and like the infidelity and the secrets, like all those things, how has that played out in your relationships?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I see that I've gone on like this journey with it. You know, I'm sure not unique in that I was a supremely horny kid, I was terrified of acting on it because of, I didn't want to be perceived as, oh, well, of course the kid whose dad owns the porn store. Right. Mm-hmm. I was also terrified to do drugs because I didn't want, oh, of course the kid whose dad sells weed is the stoner. Right. And I also, because of the infidelity, I was deeply mistrusting, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't trust anyone. So, you know, I did date a fair amount in high school, but the first two people I dated didn't live in my town, I think, because, you know, like that felt safer, both in terms of you don't have to get too close. And also like, they don't know, they're not from here. Right.
How did you find them? How did you go about dating people from outside of town?
I had a friend who I met on a celebrity fan forum who lived another town over.
Love it.
It's a fucking story.
Good old fashioned.
Like a specific celebrity fan form. Like
it's embarrassing.
Which celebrity? Well,
it was Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's fair. That makes sense of the time.
That's really
Johnny Depp-zone.com.
I'm looking that up right now.
I don't know if it still exists. But,
God, I relate to this so much too, because I also came from a small town, and like everyone that I went to kindergarten with, I essentially graduated with, and no other additional people were introduced at any time. So for 12 years, like this incestuous relationship with only 65 other people, you know, like my class was so small. So if I wanted to date someone outside of town, I had to like meet them at my summer job or at like, and I wasn't allowed to hang out with boys. So I just had to like casually somehow meet them by chance. But we did without dating apps.
You find
totally
people,
did.
Right?
Listen, if there's anyone out there who is single and looking to find their potential next partner,
and your
Johnny Depp-zone.com /boards.
When
is
was the most recent?
Still existing.
When was
there
the
are
most
totally
recent?
Right now in this moment, there are 30 users online. Okay.
This moment.
I'm no longer one of them, sadly.
You don't have that open on another tab of your laptop?
No.
Absolutely not.
Ago, what do I?
Oh, man.
I would never admit to that.
Pretty red.
That's great. Oh, that's so great. Okay, sorry, we cut you off there. You were saying that you had these two relationships that were outside of town.
So I grew, like, my small city is connected by, like, a bigger hub city. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, small cities around. So it actually was pretty, like, you know, you'd have people who played sports in another town, or they went in the city, into this big city, to do things you couldn't do in town. Mm. So the one person I met through Johnny Depp fan forum. But then I had a friend who decided to go to high school in the big city, and I met somebody through that friend.
Right.
And then after that, when I finally did date someone in my town, I chose a really religious person because that was safe too.
Totally.
It felt like. Mm-hmm. Their parents weren't happy about it, but
what an identity shift.
Yeah, right. So I would say it wasn't until grade 12 that I started realizing, like, it was my perceptions of what other people thought rather than necessarily other people. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just dated someone because I wanted to date them and had sex because I wanted to have sex and wasn't worried about it, right?
Yeah.
But it took a long time to get there.
Well, grade 12, that seems like you had to get a head on your shoulders if you're coming around to that. Because, you know, other people's perceptions of me, and I'm sure you're not perfect with this either, but I still feel like I have to sometimes weed that out of my decision making. Sometimes it's still kind of around. Would you say at all, Jeremy? Are you affected by the what you think other people perceive in terms of, I don't know, your
Do I care what people think about me?
Yeah.
I like to say that I don't, but deep down, for sure, I definitely do.
Do you think anything?
Because, like when people aren't talking shit about me, I'm like, yeah, I don't give a fuck what people say about me. But then, like, I'll read one comment. Like, this fucking interview I did the other day with Brian Goldman, and I fucking stupidly went to Twitter to be like, I wonder what people think. And I read one bad tweet out of a bunch of nice ones. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go crawl in a cave. Like, fuck me. You know? Yeah. I think no matter what, we all like to think that we don't give a shit what people think about us. But I think you're a psychopath if you don't have a little bit aspect of, like, actually caring a little bit, mm-hmm. you know? I think it's healthy not to really give a shit that much, but deep down, we all want to be loved.
Well, I suppose that's a survival.
We
want our communities to not reject us and stuff like that. So from grade 12 onward, I don't know if this resonates, but you kind of had already, it sounds like, unpacked the idea that your dad had a porn store and that was just a part of your upbringing. Some of those things that are, like, more obvious, like the sex talk that your mom gave you, or the things, you know, were like, how did that fuck me up? Or how did that, you know, affect me? But then, I don't know. I mean, I'm 38 now, so I feel like I'm continuously going, oh, also, that was not weird. I don't want to say weird because my parents were doing the best that they could, but that could have
been different.
Tweaked something inside of my head. Do you feel like you've had to do continuous amounts of reconciling?
Oh yeah, big time. So I would say around grade 12, I started just realizing that, like, I was my own person enough that no matter, like, if I had sex with people, it wasn't gonna just be like, oh, because she has the dad who owns a porn store. And I started, there's a, you know, a story that if I don't tell it, everyone's going to be mad at me, which is that in grade 10, a bunch of the popular girls were, like, whispering loudly about how my dad was, like, a pervert. Mm-hmm. And I was really upset. Like, I was really upset about it. And I called him at, like, 2 a.m. and my parents are separated at this point. He's like, get on your coat, I'm coming to pick you up. And he let me go through all of his memberships. And their parents had memberships. Everybody did. Like, everybody did. My teachers did. You know, the people who owned the local businesses did. And that was a moment for me, even though I was still reckoning with other people's perceptions, and was for years afterwards too, where I realized, like, oh, my dad's doing this openly. It's the rest of you all who have a fucking problem.
That's right. Yeah. That's the perversion right there.
Yeah.
You're all
pretending
you're all
scared of it. Pretending you don't have an actual, like, normal, healthy sexual human expression.
That gives me such intense, like, nostalgic thoughts of, I don't know if I because Kay, you and I, we've talked before. I don't know if I told you the story, but I used to work at a porn store. Like, that was my first job. My first job was working at a sex shop. And of course I was elated. I was so excited to be working at a porn store. I was 17. Wasn't even like technically allowed to be in there. Lied about my age. But my favorite part of working there was every time I would go in for my shift, you know, you got to kill some time. It's not like the porn store is like as busy as Blockbuster down the street. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit there to kill time. I would look up all of my friends' parents' names in the database and be like, whoa, okay, like Mr. Jones is in here and I can see what he rented and that's great. I'm going to go tell Stefan tomorrow. You know, like, it was such a hilarious, and it there was this like feeling of like, oh wow.
It's like having access to,
I see what's going on here.
The browsing history of, of our current day.
Yes. But there was also something that sort of, and I don't know how this, And this, I guess this kind of transitions into my next question for you, Kay, but like when I was doing that, it sort of, because again, I was young and like the idea, you know, if I took my nephew out and was like, and asked him if he was looking at boobs in magazines, like he would be like, oh God, like, I don't know. I can't talk about porn with my uncle. Like the idea of porn was very, you know, when you're like in grade 10 and 11, 12, it's kind of like, it's taboo. It's this thing that like, oh, you don't talk about that. But when I was doing this thing at the porn store and I was looking and seeing like, oh, my dad's best friend, Tim, is like in here renting lesbian porn, like every single Tuesday, like it normalized pornography for me and it normalized sexuality for me in a way where I was like, yeah, porn's not bad. Sex isn't bad. Like we're all horny. We're all trying to fucking come somehow. So like it, which I think was really healthy for me, but I'm wondering about your experience with it. And like, you know, the all the other sort of elements that are hovering over this with your dad and the shame of being that, like the daughter of the perv that everyone's talking about and all the small town politics. Was there, you know, even in this experience of you and your dad, him taking you over and showing you like, hey, look, they're all fucking perverts. Like, did that have any sort of positive effect on how you viewed sex work or porn or sexuality in general?
I mean, I think there's a really sad part to that story, which is that after he showed me the memberships, he said, but don't tell your friends. And I remember like having this kind of moment of realization that like he gets to stand in for like the bad guy. So nobody else has to. Right. And I didn't tell my friends. I've since told that story. Like, and for so long, I like didn't want to be known as the kid whose dad owns a porn store. And now it's like my party trick. Right. Now it's the funny story. And I mean, it's not all funny, but it sounds funny when I like say it at first. So I think I had this like kind of cognitive dissonance going on of, I think my dad's a pretty good guy other than like, well, I guess the whole cheating shit really fucking sucked, but I don't think he's an inherently bad person, but everybody else thinks this is a terrible thing. And I just like for the longest time struggled to reconcile those two things, I think. And so like, I just kind of didn't even like, porn was this thing my dad did that I wasn't even going to go there.
And did you like what? Did you have any history of like watching porn or utilizing porn?
It was like him selling weed because he did. I just didn't want to do it. Like I was just like, no.
And does that still exist today? Like, are you just not really a consumer of porn?
Not as much as I might have been otherwise. I think, sure. But I'm not like, it's not this hard line of like nothing anymore. Sure. I had this grand plan with my life because I was like shutting down what I would have done otherwise had this not been where I lived and my dad not done what he had done, which is I was gonna go to Ryerson. I got accepted to Ryerson, never went.
For what?
Journalism.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And then I decided not to go do that. Okay. And I was gonna go to Toronto and I was just gonna be a slut. Like that was my plan.
Yeah.
I was gonna be single forever. I was gonna have sex with all the people of all the genders, and like no one would know my dad owned the porn store unless I told them, and it would be great. But then I didn't do that. And I got into the relationship I'm still in now when I was 19 years old. And that was not my plan.
Mm-hmm. That was the opposite. Sounds like
it was
the
complete opposite. Yeah, that was not where I saw my life going. Which is, I think, another interesting part of the story.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. Mm. I think one of my party stories is the, you know, kind of the wild, you know, I'm like, I have 10 siblings and, you know, or I have 13 siblings and my dad has 10 kids with 5 different women and my mother has 4 children with 4 different men and I'm an only child because they only had me. But I was also raised, I was like one of the only kids, I was the first kid in my dad's history of having children. So there were 6 older. I have 6 older siblings from him. And I was the first one who got him as a dad, like mm-hmm. to grow up with. You know, he got sober when I was 3 or 4 and assumed some sort of responsibility, primarily, I think, because his dad came to visit and was like, okay, you got this kid you're solely responsible for. She needs a mom. You should get married and get a job, get your shit together. And a year later, he was married to my stepmother and he is sober and doing like adult things. Whereas before that, he was an actor. I mean, he was always an actor, but he was a hippie and, you know, and my mom was a hippie and my siblings' parents also hippies. And I kind of think of that time as pretty formative, even though I wasn't present for it, in how I am in relationships. I grew up with a really steady, I shouldn't say steady. I was raised by my stepmother and my dad, but primarily my stepmother, and they were both sober, and things were, you know, stable-ish. There was a lot of fighting and we didn't learn how to like apologize to each other or anything like that. So there was no reparation, but lots of fighting. But, you know, I don't know what I thought. I guess I just assumed I would meet someone and get married and do the house thing and have the kids and do the job, the career thing. But now that I'm at the place in my life where I am now and I'm going, oh, I guess some of these things like polyamory just sort of made sense to me mm-hmm. based on the way I saw my parents and my siblings' parents sort of relate to one another and raise each other's children and things like that. So at what point did you start to think, you know, your dad, who you identified as a serial monogamist, who could have benefited from this polyamory language, mm-hmm. at what point did you start to think about that?
So I would say that was like in my around like 22, 23, maybe 24. I'd been in this relationship that I didn't plan to get into that I'm still in and is this real anchor in my life? Mm-hmm. And I started, you know, question, like, I think I was always terrified that I would either be my dad, like be the person who destroyed a good thing because of their desires and inability to communicate. My dad really struggled to take accountability for like mm-hmm. the way his choices impacted other people. That was more than anything, the fault. Like that was the thing that always hurt the most, is you make choices, but then he wouldn't take accountability for those choices and the impact they had on others. And I was terrified to be that person. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified that it would happen to me too. Like both of those things. And I think early in my relationship with my partner, I was worried that I would be that person or he would be that person. But I also had these desires to be with other people too. And I like didn't know how to reckon with that. Like, am I just fucked up like my dad? Am I just going to make the same mistakes he does? And then we started actually having those conversations about like I was so scared to be what my dad was that I was like, I can't, mm-hmm. I can't be what he was. So I need to fucking talk about it. And it was around that time that the joke I make is that we've been theoretically open for like a really long time, but it's just theoretical.
Yeah.
Because I just got no game. That's the thing.
I like that. I think that theoretically having something on the table mm-hmm. is sometimes all we need to feel mm-hmm. like we're free within our relationship to like, desire others and all of those natural, like that feeling to shut that down and mm-hmm. not have to deal with that potential problem is probably what ends up driving a lot of people to leaving, like mm-hmm. you said, leaving relationships that are perfectly good. That if you just had these conversations,
yeah,
you could find your way of being relaxed and open in them.
Has it ever come up? Like, I mean, I know you said theoretically, but mm-hmm. has it ever come close to actually having to like kind of cross that bridge and have those conversations of like, okay, I'm actually going to like pursue this thing that I think I might want to.
Yeah. COVID got in the way. I was like, so when I started realizing that maybe this is just who I naturally want, like who I am and these desires, I always say that my friendships are like this too. Like I desire deep friendships with multiple people. And I have some friends who will be like, well, don't replace me. And I'm like, well, I can be best friends with all of you in our own way. Like, what do you mean replace you? Yeah. And I started realizing that maybe for me more than my partner, like that was a thing. And we started having conversations, but we were also at a really busy time in our lives. Like he was starting his career. I was finishing school and then realized I was going to go back to school for something else. And just all this stuff was going on in life. And then we kind of reached a point where we were settled in terms of like other things. And had the bigger conversations about like, okay, this is something that I'm going to pursue. And then COVID got in the way. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the summer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just really appreciative of those sort of slow unfurlings of those things within, mm-hmm. within a longstanding and trusting relationship. I think I really support that process of things taking time. And unfortunately, sometimes a little more time than you expected, like with COVID.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This could be the summer. You know, I think this could be it. They like, I feel like, you know, restrictions lifting up. There's a lot of horny people out there, you know,
who are way better probably at having sensitive conversations mm-hmm. about health or personal health.
You know, all that stuff is like, I feel like it is shifting where there's a lot more. Well, I don't know. Maybe we live in an echo chamber, but there seems to be a little bit more communication happening. You know, it's a mm-hmm.
little more open minded.
Yeah, I got to say, like, this is I love these conversations, and it's been so long. It's been too long since we've had one of just getting to peer into somebody else's personal life and talk about the things that we like most of the time, like are trained not to talk about. You know, and I want to say thank you for being so open to allowing us, you know, a bit of a worldview into your life and your past experiences. And I think conversations like this are like a good reminder to, regardless of whether or not, you know, you grew up with an upbringing that was very white picket fence, fucking boring ass beige you know, normal ass life, or you had the wild life where your dad was a porn store owner who got arrested and sent to jail for selling weed out of it. Like there is value to taking a moment to just stop and look at the people that we relied on to bring us into the world and to teach us lessons, to look at the way that they approached relationships and the way that they approached their own sexuality, whether or not you even like have a grasp on that or not, but even just to think about it and then to look back at yourself and go, okay, how has that had an effect on me? And has it been positive? Has it been negative? What can I glean from just like breaking that down? And conversations like this are a good reminder that it's worth doing that. You know, it's worth taking stock of how the relationships we've had in our past have shaped us into who we are today. And so I just want to say thank you for that reminder, because this has been really, really fun.
You're welcome.
Do you have any other tidbits or stories or anything we haven't covered that you you definitely want to make sure gets included in this odd tribute to your sex life?
I think I just like to button it. I was forced to think about these things at a young age because of just this being the life that I had, and it was really hard, but I'm also really grateful for it, because I think I developed both a willingness to talk about things that other people didn't want to, and a starting point to interrogate things earlier than other people might. And I mean, ultimately, I am where I am because of that, and I'm pretty happy right now. So
that's great.
Yeah,
it's finishing with gratitude. Love that.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for you, Kay, and I'm grateful we've had a chance to meet, and grateful that you took time to sit down with us and chat with us today. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Same.
Hello.
Hello, my love. That little like twinkly stars thing, is that where Emily Sori's song blends into Rich O'Coin's song?
No, you're hearing two different things happening at one time.
See.
That
okay.
You're hearing the music that's kicking in for our patrons. Hi, patrons.
Hi.
If you're a patron of ours, you can watch the aftercare segments, the host episodes, and the foreplay segments over on our Patreon, patreon.com/turnmeon. And so you're hearing the music that's leading them into this.
Yeah.
But then you're also hearing, just because of the way this is all set up.
Yeah.
You're hearing
magic.
You're hearing Rich O'Coin's music that transitions us out of the conversation we just had with Kay into this conversation.
Okay. Okay.
So no one else heard that.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't matter where you're listening from. You heard one thing or another. You didn't hear both, but you just got to hear both.
Donut's just assuring me that I'm not crazy.
That's right.
And he probably heard it too, because they have great hearing.
Yeah. So a little bit of insight how the magic's made here.
Magic
at the
show
Sick Boy headquarters.
Biz magic.
That was so sweet, eh?
That was great. It felt like a really nice return to our roots. And you know, I just love a good story about a dad.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a story about a dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and get my Just the Tips out of the way here, because it kind of lines up with this. Have you seen the movie Coda yet?
Nope.
Oh my goodness. One best picture at the Oscars this week.
Yeah, I know.
This week. This year. You don't like it?
I don't know. It just doesn't interest me.
Oh, it's really good.
Is it? Okay. I'll watch it.
Okay, well.
There's no aliens. There's no fucking excitement, you know. It's just like, I don't like family drama.
Oh yeah, that's what it is.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm aware of what it is.
But it's got a really awesome character in it. I don't remember his name, but he plays basically the music teacher.
Okay.
And he has, his whole part is incredible. His role is incredible. His lines are wonderful.
Yeah.
You should watch it just for his performance.
Okay, I will.
I had a really emotional week, and it's only Wednesday. And so yesterday I got home from, you know, let's call it a funeral. And And I was having a really hard time because I'd been around family for the whole
time
and just some exhausting family dynamics that were happening. And I got home and watched that, and it just gave me good, it gave me good heart feels and, you know, released the cry that I also needed to have. And it's a feel good movie and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one character is really tremendous.
And this ties into sort of the conversation that we have with Kay, sort of?
Well, sort of, because the fellow who plays the father in that movie he won Best Supporting Actor for his part in it.
Yeah.
And there is, it's the father-daughter relationship. And you know, it doesn't necessarily focus on their relationship, the whole film, but there's key pivotal things that happen just between those two characters.
Right.
That is, you know, it's just like, let alone that the actor looks, you know, roughly like my dad, like a rough looking old man.
Troy Kotzer.
Yeah.
Kotzer.
Yeah. At least in the film, he's
deaf.
He has his, they're all deaf.
Oh yeah. How about that?
There's three deaf actors in that family.
Neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And the sign language is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't want to give anything away, but I just brought that up because I think it was, you know, it was specifically the relationship between the daughter and the father in that movie that really moved me.
Yeah.
And like just tore my heart out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, parents, they have quite a, God, I couldn't imagine having a kid. Every day I'd be like, I'm fucking this thing up.
Yeah. I think my fear would be more like something's going to happen to this person. And
right.
It's that would be brutal for me. So yeah, the funeral I was at was for my sibling's father. Right. So I have an extended family. But the big deal about it was that my brother was home, and I only see my brother probably once every 5-6 years. Mm. His father lived in Connecticut. So he, you know, flew to Connecticut, and then my sister, our shared sister, was like, please come to Prince Edward Island and sing at my show, and we'll tribute this concert to our father.
Did you sing at the show?
I didn't sing at the show, no. But I did sing quite a bit, a lot with my family, and that was really great. But also, that's a really emotional thing for me. And then my brother, he's going through a thing where his you know, he just couldn't bear to think about life without his father. And now it's here, and he just like doesn't really know how to cope with it. So there's a lot going on there. And then his child Shay, who's named after my previously deceased sister, who's just turned 12, wrote a note to David, my brother, saying, I just want you to know I'm not your daughter, I'm your son. And I've known this for about a year.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. What? And I like girls and boys and basically everybody. And so he was coming to me and being like, how do I decipher this? He's like, I'm totally cool with this, but like, he's really struggling with it. I was like, well, you've got gender conversation happening there, but you've also got sexuality conversation happening there. And it's all, and I think he's very, and you know, I think based on some other little details about Shay's experience and whatnot, I get the sense that Shay is in a bit of a fluid experimental, you know, which I think is really important for kids. Be able to feel like they can go through when they're wrestling with their own identity.
I wonder if Shay will change their name.
Well, Shay's a really good,
it's a great
neutral name. It would.
That makes my heart.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Makes my heart feel nice that Shay's coming out.
Yeah. So that's why Just the Tips for me is Coda.
Okay.
If you feel like you could use some heart medicine.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? You got anything on the tips?
No, I don't.
No, nothing.
No. I got some recommendations.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to get into that now?
Well, you can.
I had my first UTI this week.
Oh.
Yeah.
I how did that go? Did you treat it with just cranberry juice and that was fine?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm not quite out of the woodwork yet.
Still hurts when you pee?
Not really.
Okay.
Not as much. It's more of like a, you know what's funny is like, I feel like the feeling that I have right now, what would actually feel awesome is a nice gentle sounding.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I've never ever thought that.
I would never thought I would have heard those words come out of your mouth.
I don't think sounding's for me, but man, I bet you would feel real good right now.
Because it would be cold?
No,
or?
like there's like I'm on the end of this UTI, and which I've never had before.
Yeah.
So it was like it burnt. Like when I peed, I was like, ow, 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 ow. Like yeah. Right when I start peeing,
yeah.
It hurt.
Yeah.
And it was like a kind of like sharp, like stabby, kind of burny feeling. And then when I'm done, like it only happens like at the beginning and like, you know, like
kind of
sort of like halfway. No, no. When the pee is done, it's done.
Okay.
When the pain's done.
Did you feel any heaviness in your pelvis?
Never had
like,
any of
pelvis?
That. No, like bladder wasn't feeling like
full.
No, none
feel
of
like
that.
You couldn't
no.
Empty your bladder.
No, none of that. But so what I did was I just like crushed a 2 liter of just pure cranberry juice.
Good for you.
Oh, sorry, a liter.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, is that tart.
Yeah, it'll dry out your whole
holy fuck.
Face.
It was crazy.
I know.
And then I was just, and then I've just been pounding bubblies, like nonstop drinking bubblies. So it's been a couple of days and I'm kind of on the tail end of it, I think, because the pain isn't there, but there's like this slight, almost like, it's like almost like an itch that I can't reach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a tickly feeling.
Yeah.
And I bet you sounding would like
clear
scratch,
that out.
Scratch that itch real nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I won't. So,
no. Because why? You can't find anyone who does that or?
No. I don't.
Where do you get tools for that? Or do you just use household objects?
You probably just buy like a nice set of like metallic chopsticks.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
That's what I'd say.
They get kind of wider as they go, though. You know, like they start sort of tapered.
Probably what you want.
Okay.
I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know enough about sounding. But I won't do that. But my just the tips. Here's the recommendation. Because never had it before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I know exactly how it happened. And because I used some lube that I had kicking around.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like, it was like, not homemade lube. But it was like a lube from a company that makes like natural lube. I think it's like weed infused stuff. But I didn't realize that there was like a best before date on it.
Okay.
And that best before date was a long ago.
Yeah.
Long
so
ago.
So tell me, did you verify this possibility with any, let's say, healthcare professionals in
nope.
your life?
No, this is totally bro okay. science speculation.
Okay. Okay.
But what I do know is that before I used this lube,
I
didn't have a UTI. And right, like literally the next morning
yeah.
after using this lube,
yeah.
I had a UTI.
Yeah.
Now, not only was I using this lube just like on
yeah.
the external side of my dick.
Yeah.
From the active coitus that was being done while using the lube, there was a lot of sort of like stimulation to the very tip of my penis.
Oh,
and like,
okay.
Like the whole, you know, my piss hole. Hey, donut.
Get that pen.
Bring that back over here, please. A little
you keep telling your story. I'll get the pen.
So, yeah. So there was a lot of like, I was basically, I mean, the lube was getting worked up into my piss hole. So it's got to be that. I feel like it had to have been that.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. So
yeah.
I don't.
And this shit was best before date was like
2019.
So that's a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's like pre-COVID lube.
I know when you first mentioned that to me on the phone that you thought that was the source, I was like, kind of didn't really give it much credit, but the more I think about it, there is a whole thing. Like I learned recently that lemon juice left at room temperature is like prime for bacterial growth.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I buy bottled pure lemon juice, right? Yeah. So, and it always gets left on the counter because always. But so it leads me to believe that, like, I guess I never really thought about the origin of bacteria or like how it might proliferate on some sort of natural substance.
Yeah.
But I bet we have some listeners that might have some insight into that. Like,
if you do, please. Yeah. TurnMeOnPodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to know.
We'd like to know if this is a legit, what do you call an attempt at bro science? A hypothesis?
Yeah, this was my bro science hypothesis.
Okay.
Now, my partner also, she also ended up with the UTI.
Yeah.
Exact same timing.
Yeah.
Exact same. And the partner that I was with when I was playing with this lube.
Yeah.
And they also had this lube being played with.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure like it all kind of stacks up. Now, she was like, she doesn't fuck around. She was like, I'm getting antibiotics right now.
It's different for this particular anatomy, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a little closer to the bladder. It's a little closer to the kidneys.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't want to go through the process of having to convince the pharmacy to just give me, you know, a course of Septra.
Because could she just go? Because that
you can
do that
right now, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
You can just go and say, I have a UTI without going and getting a prescription.
At least here in Nova Scotia.
Wow, that's so good.
And you know what? I think the reason for that is because it was such a hassle for people when they had a UTI.
That it's like brutal.
They would have to go to a clinic and wait at the clinic and do the whole fucking thing and then get the prescription. I think now you can just go into the pharmacy and go, look, here are my symptoms. Here's what it's presenting.
Yeah.
I need antibiotics, and they'll go, all right, cool. Here's like 3 days worth of Septra.
That's great.
But I didn't even want to do that. I was a bit stubborn about it. So I was like, no, I'm gonna flush this out. And I think I have.
Well, the thing is,
now it's just tickly.
Well, you used to go to a walk-in clinic to get this prescription, right? But let's say you get symptoms on a Saturday. And you can't go to a fucking clinic until, you know, Monday. And it's, I don't know, it like for anyone
who bad,
has
you know?
Never had one, it gets real bad real fast.
Yeah, right.
Like it doesn't, at least in my body, I've had a number of them. It doesn't creep up on you. It's like there when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
And I remember my first one, I had it when I was 14 and, I remember like not having an idea of what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
Sat down to pee started coming, and I think I just like grabbed the walls, you know, and was like, oh my God, what is this excruciating pain? And
immediately my mind was like, fuck, is this an STI?
Yeah.
That like was like laying dormant for like a long time.
Yeah.
I was kind of had like a bit of a panic there about that for a second,
but no.
But well, I mean, like, no, I mean, I don't think so. You know, it's like, there was no like, you know, sorry folks, there was no discharge or like weird smell or like, it literally was just
pain.
As soon as the pee comes out, ouchie, ouchie, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which sounds like a UTI.
And you don't want to mess around with UTIs because a lot of folks get them chronically and it really does.
Yeah.
And then for most folks who end up taking antibiotics on, or I shouldn't say most, but a lot of folks who end up taking antibiotics for UTIs, guess what they get?
Yeast infection.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So my just the tips is if you haven't used lube in a long time, because I haven't had a need for lube. Right. I love lube. Lube's always really fun. But due to circumstances, really was not necessary.
Okay.
Now it is very much necessary.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I got the stuff that I haven't used and I've had it for like 2 years. So if you have like old lube, fucking chuck that shit out.
Yeah,
chuck that shit out. Like get a new bottle. It's not, it's not expensive.
Mm-hmm. It might be an indication that you need to use more lube.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Use up that bottle.
Yeah. So,
and then
that got me thinking, I found this story.
I wonder if you kept it in the fridge.
Oh, it'd probably last longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, that lube's good. The stuff that I was using, I like it.
Yeah.
But I really like that. What is it? Sutil? Subtle?
Oh, yeah.
I like that shit.
Yeah. That's I don't know. Subtle.
Subtle.
I guess. It's like water based.
Sutil. Yeah. I'm not even sure if it's water or oil.
I'm pretty sure it's
but
it's,
that
it's
shit water. Lasts. Like it goes the fucking distance. It's really great. And you can get a like pretty fat bottle. I'm sure it's not that expensive. So
yeah, definitely has a longer shelf life. I'm sure it has more.
Yeah. Than some organic stuff that has some like CBD in it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But also support your local lube makers.
Soothe is actually a botanical.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, that's what it says on their website. There
you go. Yeah, whatever. I was also using some of that, and like it's a really old bottle of that. So I'm going to throw it all my lube. No more lube. Fucking throwing it all out.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get some new stuff. But doctors warn against this worrying trend of using toothpaste as lube.
Ew. Ouch.
I found this article while I was looking up lube stuff. Doctors urge the public not to use toothpaste as a lubricant after several people shared their painful experiences on social media. Over the last few months, a number of posts have cropped up on Reddit detailing people's experiences of using toothpaste as lubricant during masturbation or sex. And they sound incredibly painful, as you would expect. You would think that most people would know better than to try this out for themselves at home, but apparently not, of course. A bunch of fucking freaks out there.
You got to put it on the fine print.
As such, a medical expert has stepped in to warn people of the dangers that can occur if you use toothpaste anywhere other than your teeth. Dr. Sri Datta, a consultant in obstetrics and gynecology at My Healthcare Clinic, revealed how the product can cause infections or chemical burns if used on the genitals. Speaking to Mirror Online, she said, quote, toothpaste can contain ingredients such as bleaching agents, peppermint, or scented oils, which can be irritating or abrasive. These may cause a mild chemical burn and blistering on any area of sensitive skin. I definitely advise against putting toothpaste onto your genitals. These products are specially designed for oral use and can disrupt the balance of your vaginal flora, which might lead to thrush or bacterial vaginosis. No, BV. Yeah. We know
how
tricky
I got
fucking BV is, right? No. You didn't get it from using toothpaste in your
Absolutely not.
They can also damage the delicate skin in the area of the vaginal wall, affecting the amount of pleasure you experience during sex. She added, quote, I would not recommend using toothpaste or any other bathroom products as lubricant, for that matter, on your genitals, as these products are not recommended for this use and can irritate your skin as well as disrupt the cellular balance of the skin on your genitals. And then it goes on to say silicone or water-based lubricants, which are designed and intended for use during sex, are the best products to invest in. In one Reddit post, a man claims he got chemical burns after putting toothpaste on his penis, and it wasn't pretty. He recalled, quote, later that day, I went to use the toilet, and I took down my trousers, and I saw some discoloration to my dick. I had a look, and all the skin was red and raw, with some parts of the skin beginning to scab.
No.
The pain was really, really, really bad. It was really hard to walk and keep a straight face. And another confessed to using toothpaste as a lubricant and said that the pain had been so bad they had to take painkillers. They wrote, quote, I accidentally used toothpaste as lube.
Just wasn't looking. So they just
so love drunk. They just went bottle, squirt. It's the morning now and it's still really inflamed. There's less pain, but I'm on painkillers, so there's some help. But please, for the love of God, in whatever universe you're thinking of doing this, do not use toothpaste as lube.
Absolutely not. We used to use toothpaste as teenagers to burn zits off our face.
Yeah, actually, you know what's funny is when I went on my very first date with Kira, I had a really bad zit. I almost called the date off because I had a zit so bad, which is so fucking dumb. And then I texted her and I was like, look, I have a bad zit and I'm 34 years old and deal with it. She laughed and said, it's okay. We can pop it at the restaurant if you want.
Gross.
And then I was like, oh, I like this girl.
Yeah.
But I was kind of like panicking. And so my high school lover, mm-hmm. who's like my best friend, I was telling her, I was like, man, I got to stay with this girl. I really like her. And this fucking zit. And she was like, I'm coming over right now. And she brought over like a bunch of shit, but she brought toothpaste. And she was like, all right, first of all, like put toothpaste on it, do this. And then she gave me like a bunch of little, like these little like sticky things.
Oh yeah.
And put it on overnight. Fucking worked. Toothpaste worked well.
Yeah. My sister Shay actually
dried that shit right up.
Taught me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but thanks. Shout out Katie. Thank you.
If you're doing this remedy at home, by the way, it has a drying effect.
Yeah.
So you really want to make sure it's focused just on the site. Like you don't want to spread it around. the surrounding area.
The fuck? Back in 2018, a number of women took part in a bizarre beauty trend which saw them slathering toothpaste on their breasts. They believed the toothpaste would help them grow, but experts quickly shot down the theory.
A shampoo or a conditioner that was like promoted as something that could promote growth. Obviously, what they're talking about hair.
Sure, like Pantene Pro V. Yeah, like,
but
like
definitely as a preteen, I was like, let's get these boobs to grow, and I just use that conditioner to.
Really? You were putting that on your tits?
Yeah, it didn't work.
Nope.
It did not.
It didn't.
No. But again, I don't have kids, so they're exactly basically in the same place they were, you know, when I grew them in the first place. So
I wonder how huge your tits would have been if you did have a kid.
Well, my mom's boobs got really big when she was pregnant.
And then stayed big?
Yeah.
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 Interesting. They can stay big after.
Yeah. I think by big, maybe it just means
they just hang lower. A lower.
Yeah. A little heavier looking.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no, it's funny the things we do. It reminded me of
the things we do.
Something I read about hemorrhoids that people were doing as self treatment of hemorrhoids.
God, I hate this already.
Like hemorrhoids that grow externally,
dingle dangles.
Yeah, they would try to tie them off, like try to lacerate them off.
Ay, caramba.
With little like.
Ichiwawa,
dental floss.
No, dude, don't do that.
Yeah, it can really fuck you up because it can get infected. It's like a hernia, kind of like you. Anyway, we do that. It's weird cosmetic things that we do.
Yeah, I hate that.
Well, did you have more you wanted to talk
about? That's
it.
What do you got? You got something?
Oh, I got a little something.
All right.
It's very little. How much do you know about...
Like my flaccid penis? Someone messaged me the other day. They were like, I can't believe I'm at... They sent me pictures. They were like, I can't believe I'm at the gym listening to you talk about your flaccid penis. And I was like, hey, you subscribe for a reason. Yeah. And then they messaged me like 20 minutes later. Oh my God, now it's just your cum. And I was like...
Wow, you got a play-by-play of
something. Man, when I'm at the gym,
podcast.
I gotta be listening to some like fucking hard music, you know? Like, I don't think I could handle listening to definitely couldn't handle listening to myself fucking talk at the gym. That's for goddamn
That's
sure.
That's not your favorite place to review topics?
Yeah, no.
So how much do you know about John Harvey Kellogg?
Oh, he's fucky. That's the Kellogg's guy, the guy that behind, he was a charlatan, I think. And the guy behind Kellogg's Corn Flakes and my favorite Frosted Flakes.
He's probably rolled
he
over.
Mormon, in, right?
Or, rolled over in your, is that the Adventist church?
Oh, maybe it's
Seventh
not
Day Adventist church. Yeah, there were all, I don't really want to talk about him, I'll tell you. I'll just give you a little brief overview of how he came to my attention.
It's a Protestant Christian denomination. It's not Mormon. I take that back.
We also share the same birthday. I'm just seeing as I'm looking. His Wikipedia, February 26th.
Yeah.
But he was born in 1852, and he did all kinds of. He had all kinds of theories that we won't talk about today.
He had some weird stuff on masturbation, didn't he?
He did.
Yes. I know some of this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he had some pretty strong opinions about masturbation.
Yeah.
But actually, I came across him in this time because he is known as he established a sanatorium based on hydrotherapy. So my school is the Canadian College of Massage and Hydrotherapy.
Okay.
So we talked about John Harvey Kellogg in school and sort of his theories around hydrotherapy, which like, can you separate that from all the shitty things like that he believed in? Anyway, but one of the things that caught my eye about him in cornflakes in particular was this word that I was really surprised I had never seen before, which is an aphrodisiac. Not aphrodisiac, an aphrodisiac.
Oh, okay.
Anna.
Not an aphrodisiac.
No.
An aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So his thing about cornflakes, like he promoted like really bland, non-stimulating food.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Right. Cause like, right. Corn flakes were made to make you not horny. Right.
Exactly.
Man,
yeah.
That's crazy. Cause corn flakes make me horny as fuck.
Why?
Oh, anything that like,
well, anything, does.
Anything that, that tastes great. Doesn't make it doesn't anything, everything. Makes
but he
me
would
horny.
Roll in his grave if he heard that you liked frosted flakes or that you would put sugar on cereal. You
yeah,
know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It's not meant for
but
that.
But even cornflakes without sugar is so good.
Well, so an aphrodisiac weirdo. Came up.
An aphrodisiac.
Yeah. And I'm just going to read you this little Wikipedia definition. It says an aphrodisiac
yep.
is a substance that quells or blunts the libido. It is the opposite of an aphrodisiac. Some people use anaphrodisiacs in order to curb a very high libido or due to hypersexuality. And so some common anaphrodisiacs are alcohol and tobacco. This is something that...
I'm sorry. Did you say common anaphrodisiacs mm-hmm. are tobacco and alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that true?
Well... It's typically an unintended consequence and not usually the main reason for use. While alcohol is used socially because it initially reduces mental inhibitions, studies have shown that over time alcohol physically decreases arousal and makes achieving climax more difficult. So that's 100% the case for me. I cannot come
sure,
if I'm drunk.
Sure. That makes sense to me. And like if I drank too much, it's like good luck even getting hard.
Right?
Wait, nicotine does the same thing?
Tobacco? I don't know if
tobacco,
it's the nicotine.
Tobacco is nicotine.
Is it their equivalent?
Well, I mean, you know, that's...
Or tobacco has nicotine.
Why
in
do
it?
People use tobacco? They don't use it. They use it for the nicotine.
Okay. I don't really know that much about it. But I do...
Oh, fuck, man.
It did...
Do I have to stop doing fucking snot?
No, because you probably are on the more hypersexual side of things.
Right.
So you're probably fine. It's probably just... keeping you at a healthy, regular...
How would I Google this? Does nicotine cause, what is it called? Like impotence?
Well, it's going to say 100% yes. That's written all over the cigarette packages.
It does it? Oh, wow. Well, yeah, because I don't smoke, so I don't see that shit. And all the warnings on this thing are in Swedish. Denna tobrafvara skaldar halsen uch ar... So I can't even pronounce this last word because it's 22 letters. Boroin de Frank Melden.
So in this article, it says studies have evaluated the effect of herbal anaphrodisiacs on men and women. These include studies on the effect of substances on both hormone levels and behavior. So the mechanism of the active component of some plant-based anaphrodisiacs may be the inhibition of enzymes that catalyze the conversion of sex hormone precursors into androstenedione, which promotes the reduction of sexual urges.
Yeah, so it says here cigarettes contain up to 41,000 chemicals. Oh my god! Some of which is not in this,
right,
folks?
In your sluice,
snooze. Those chemicals don't exist in this. Which some of that can cause ED. Such as acetone, arsenic, and carbon monoxide. Those are all bad things. Male smokers have an increased risk of ED due to the damage those chemicals can do to their blood vessels, narrowing the arteries and causing poor blood supply to the penis. Nicotine has a direct effect on the blood vessels that carry blood to the penis by reducing the blood flow and this makes getting and maintaining erection difficult. It is advised to avoid all types of tobacco and nicotine. Fuck.
Is this news to you?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I didn't know.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
Dang. Because, like, I always thought, like, I mean, I thought nicotine was like a vasodilator. I could be wrong about that. But, like, when I do this stuff, mm-hmm. it's like drinking a coffee.
Right.
I got a shit
mm-hmm.
immediately, like a coffee.
Okay.
I can think more clear, like a coffee.
Yeah.
Right?
A vasodilator. I'm just going to Google that because I wonder if they have to be. Nicotine constricts blood vessels, including those in the skin and coronary blood vessels, but dilates blood vessel in skeletal muscle, in muscles. So it powers up your muscles.
Wow. So this would be good for my pre-workouts. Do a little bit of nicotine before I hit the gym.
Yeah.
Because I've been going to the gym. I don't know if you'd noticed.
Yeah, you're huge.
Getting a little bit bigger.
Yeah, lots of muscle tone.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/Jeremy on if you want to get a good look at these muscles. Have you ever heard the word onanism?
No.
It means masturbation, but it was just it's just an older way of
onanism.
Onanism.
Like I'm gonna go onanism, or I'm going to take part in some onanism.
I'm going to take part in some onanism,
right,
or self-abuse, as John Harvey Kellogg would call it.
Some mutual self-abuse with me and my partner.
Exactly. I just thought that was really interesting because I'm taking another, after my very bad hangover on Monday, another little break from alcohol and actually cannabis, because I suspect, I don't know like where we're at with scientific studies on cannabis. I'm assuming even before it sort of got legalized here, it's been underway regularly on an ongoing basis. But that being said, you do need funding to do experiments and things like that. So maybe not. But I wonder, and we've talked about this on the show quite a bit, but if cannabis might also have some aphrodisiac.
Really? Because I thought that made people horny.
I don't know if it makes people horny or if it, one, relaxes people,
mm-hmm,
makes them potentially a little more aware of their body and sensation. I don't know if that actually is the same thing as making someone horny.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But
because we've spoken to people on my other podcast, Sick Boy. Maybe you've heard of it. About with people that have like things like vaginosis, mm-hmm, you know, like where,
right,
and where weed actually like really helps them,
like a more of a relaxant, yes, kind of way.
Yeah, it allows the, or even like PVD, like what's PVD stand for again? I forget what the P is. Oh, provoked vestibulodynia.
Oh yeah.
Which also the weed apparently helps a lot.
Okay.
With that. So like painful sex and like.
Yeah.
Like weed sort of helps there.
Well, here's the thing. When cannabis is used as medicinally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's probably all right. But when it's used chronically.
Yeah, when it's being abused.
What ends up happening, what I was reading about is particularly how it can inhibit your reward center of your,
sure,
mind.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily, because it affects your dopamine.
Yeah.
It can, by the sounds of it, my interpretation of what I was reading is that it can inhibit the user from experiencing like basically that sense of satisfaction.
Right.
About having accomplished something. And if you don't feel rewarded by your efforts, you're less motivated,
right,
to do the thing.
Right. So in turn, you'd be less motivated to fuck.
I think so. Like you might get less gratification from.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's an untested theory, but as I would say chronic cannabis user of 20 years now.
You've noticed that?
Well, I don't know if I've noticed that because that's half my life.
Right.
I know I was already a pretty like emotionally fragile person growing up, but and sad a lot. I'm not equating depression with the effects of chronic cannabis use, obviously, but I don't know. So I kind of just, yeah, the longest I've probably taken a break from it in the last 20 years is maybe a couple of months.
Yeah, right.
And similar with alcohol and I'm still really hung up on my own libido and like my own like level of hypo or hypersexuality and trying to make sense of it all. I don't know how long I would have to get those things both out of my system before I could actually start seeing some results. But I am curious, particularly around the whole motivation thing, not just with sex, but in general, like having that sense of motivation and then achievement when something is done.
Yeah, interesting. I've never really, I haven't, I mean, I was abusing alcohol pretty heavily there during COVID.
Yeah, same.
But I've always been pretty horny.
Yeah.
Like, I've always been pretty hyper ready to go.
Yeah.
And even when I was drinking way too much. So.
Maybe that's more of a escapism thing in that case.
Yeah.
Like, pairing, like, alcohol and
even the sexuality.
Sex as a bit of escapism.
Totally, yeah.
I don't know. Anywho. Yeah, I just, I wanted to get that, those couple new words off my chest. That's really, and then everything
what's
else.
What's the masturbation word again?
Onanism.
Onanism. It doesn't feel good in the mouth.
Doesn't roll off the tongue.
Onanism. No, I don't like that word very much.
I don't know if I can pull it up here in a timely manner, but I did read a really, actually, maybe onanism. This was Kellogg was able to draw upon many medical sources' claims. Kellogg was especially zealous campaigner against masturbation.
What a fucking loser.
Yeah. He was able to draw upon many medical sources' claims such as, quote, neither the plague, nor war, nor smallpox, nor similar diseases have produced results so disastrous to humanity as a pernicious habit of onanism.
He was the type of guy that for sure believed that, like, you jerk off enough, you'll start growing hair out of your palms.
You'll like this. Kellogg strongly warned against the habit, in his own words, claiming of masturbation-related deaths, such a victim literally dies by his own hand.
Who's dying from jerking off?
People masturbating with toothpaste too much, probably.
Yeah, I suppose that'd be it. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this this very fun episode, OG episode of Turn Me On Podcast. Thanks for supporting the podcast. You can continue to do so by leaving a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. We love seeing those. And you can simply rate the podcast on your Spotify mobile app if you're listening over there. And I'm sure there's lots of other places where you can do those sorts of things, you know, wherever you find podcasts. And to our patrons, we love you. Thank you so much. Always nice to see new patrons hopping on board. Patreon.com/turnmeon if you want to be one of those. And again, you can watch the host segments over there. Other than that,
send us an email.
Send us an email, right.
Reach out. Let's chat.
turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to be a guest like Kay was today, or if you have a brain boner, or if you just have, if you just want to let me know what, let me know anything about UTIs or sounding.
Oh, yeah. And for anybody who is a new listener, brain boner, which we haven't done in a long time, is really a question or a query for advice from Jeremy and I. Just some friendly pals offering some friendly pal advice about really anything, sex, dating, relationships.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, that is it for this week. Until next week.
Go touch yourself.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up! What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.